Hey everyone, welcome back to Huron County Author Talk, a podcast where we speak to many talented local authors about a variety of topics within the world of writing. I'm your host, Hamilton Baker of the Huron County Library, and I'm excited to bring you another episode in Season 2. If you're a writer, a reader, or someone who likes to hear authors talk about their craft, how they publish their books, different marketing strategies they employ, and much more, then this show is for you. This time around, the group talks about different strategies and approaches to writing dialogue, the necessity of grabbing the reader's attention early on in a novel, and how the pace of storytelling has increased in the modern era. They also talk about how to plan and write their plots. Enjoy. What's the difference between good dialogue and bad dialogue, and how do you improve your dialogue?
That's a good question. I think authenticity, like right now, is key in dialogue. Mm-hmm. Actually, David and I had a good conversation after the last time we met, because he said he's been struggling with dialogue. Mm-hmm. And just because he hasn't written in that mode before, he hasn't written a lot in dialogue.
Right.
And my suggestion to him was to write nothing but dialogue and just imagine the scene and what people would say. Mm-hmm. But then not to be tricked into saying too much, like the implied, right? Mm-hmm. Like this, you know, it's funny because the older I get, I find all the information all the time works best for me because my brain's just not as fast as when I was young. You know, you just don't feel as sharp, right?
Right.
So I wish people would give me more information. Mm-hmm. But that's not how people really speak. Like, they don't give you all the information all the time. There's always an inference. Mm-hmm. And sometimes as you get older, the inference is you don't catch up quick, right? And you're not connected to the speed of the conversation because you're busy searching for the connection and the inference connection. Mm-hmm. So I started telling my wife, you know, all the information all the time would be great.
Right.
It hasn't worked yet.
No.
Because that's not all natural. And I think that's what people fall into, that trap of all the information all the time. People saying everything.
And most conversations are not linear.
No,
which is the other thing, is that it circles around, circles back, it deviates sometimes. Sometimes the person completely misses the point, and whether they do it on purpose or by accident can be left up to the interpretation of the reader. And sometimes that itself becomes like a plot point or a thing that you need to then circle back to later in the narrative. So, yeah. You don't want your dialogue to be anything mundane. Like, your dialogue is also supposed to move your plot forward, and it's supposed to make sure that it's driving your story, right? So how was your day? Unless the answer is something really imperative to your actual story, it's probably not a good use of your dialogue, right? So
when I was working with my publisher with my last Rose Blair Murder Mystery, and the editor was going through some of my work, and one of the points that she made, which made me think, is when you do dialogue, don't just do the conversation between two people, but for instance, you could say something like, I can't think of the word, but you have to do the actions that go with the dialogue. So somebody would be saying something, and then you say afterwards, she coughed and then proceeded to pick up a pen, blah, 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 and then the dialogue continues. So it's not just, as you said, Wendy, a linear thing. There's description going on as well as the dialogue.
The action is a story. You don't suspend the action for the sake of the dialogue.
No, you continue the story because the way the person is reacting to either the dialogue, somebody else, is very pertinent to the character of the person. So, you know, if the person you're writing about is impatient or something, they could be tapping their their foot, or they can be clicking their tongue, or they can be sighing deeply. So you don't just do the conversation, you do the descriptive narrative in between the dialogue.
That makes good sense, because everybody doesn't react verbally, so how are you going to show the character of the character reacting with it?
I write and have written lots of plays, and a play, when you talked about, I think it was David Yates you were talking about, mm-hmm. He does all the historical non-fictions that he's done a lot of research with. What he hasn't done is put that into a play, so you have to then take what your research you've done and put it into dialogue. And when you write a play, you also have to write instructions for the actors. So, like, they walk across the stage and confront blah, 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 Admiral Bayfield. So writing plays actually really, really is a good way to get into dialogue, because it's nothing but dialogue with a few stage instructions. So, for someone like David to go from what he's done, which is a huge amount of research, and then taking that research, putting it into dialogue, into a play, would be the best thing out for him, because it's pure dialogue. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I have some experience doing some screenplay writing, mm-hmm. and exactly that, where it's dialogue driven, right? But you do have to put the descriptions in there for what you want your characters to do in terms of where they're and how they're moving and what they're locating and some reaction stuff. But
yeah,
80% of what you write, 90% of what you write is dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, screenplay writing is even more detailed, the information that's needed, mm-hmm. because the cameraman has to know where they're going, and also the art director has to have a real visual as to what's going on in the movie. I mean, similar to a play, but more so. I had an attempt at writing a screenplay a little while ago, and I had to really try and put myself into the visuals of a cameraman looking in on the scene, which is not that different from the audience watching a play, but it's just more detailed.
I guess, do you guys find it comes naturally, dialogue? I know for myself, it doesn't. I have to go back and I see dialogue that's either too boring or too woolen. It just doesn't. I can tell it needs work. It does not come naturally for me.
I don't find it hard at all if I know my characters. So if I know my characters well, it's dialogue super easy. Mm-hmm. But in those first, like, few chapters where, because I am not a super big plotter, so in those first few chapters where you're basically getting to know your characters, I sometimes find I have to go back and redo that dialogue or change some of it, because as I get to know the characters, I'm like, oh, they would never have said it that way, right? And so you end up changing it. But the further into the story I get and the more I get to know the characters, the easier the dialogue is. It's just like, it's like listening to two people have a conversation in a room.
Yeah. And I'm with you there, Wendy, and particularly the more you get to know the characters. The only thing is, what I've learned over the years with dialogue, I used to say things like, she said, or he said, or, you don't have to do that. You don't have to break, you can break, the dialogue can become stilted if you say, she said, and then you do the dialogue. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The dialogue should flow without breaking it up with she said or he said or whatever.
Yeah, as long as there's only two characters in the room and it's clear who's speaking. As soon as you get three or more characters, you should really have the dialogue tags, or it gets super confusing for your reader. Mm-hmm. Like, who said that? Why? Mm-hmm. Who's talking?
Yeah.
Yeah, but there again, using the descriptive bit that I was trying to explain, you could say something like, Robert interrupted Susan mid-flow, and she turned to him and furiously shouted, "How dare you?" You know, he interrupted, not yeah. just Robert said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the action beats.
The yeah. action, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really liked your comment about when you said genuine to the character and how what people would say or not say, and how you can even drive the story by what people don't say as much as what mm-hmm. they do say. Mm-hmm. Right? You can put something out there and leave it hanging, and the character does not respond.
Yeah, yeah. Just it's so as, fun just to layer it.
As,
yeah.
Just as telling yeah. as what they could have said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I really like that.
Yeah. It's even more fun when a reader picks up on it. So, like, because I read on Wattpad too, so when I publish a chapter, they can comment in real time on it. And so when I do something that I think is particularly clever and a reader actually picks up on it, then I'm like, oh, yes, like, that's amazing that they saw that. Because when you actually publish a book out into the world, yeah. you don't ever really know unless you meet that person at an event or something if anything stuck or if it hit the way that you wanted it to. So that part about the like digital publishing and the immediacy of the feedback is really amazing sometimes to hear that someone caught something that you did deliberately and that they got from it what you were hoping someone would get from it. So you know at least one person in the world is going to know what you were talking about. So
so you said you're not much of a plotter, yeah. but if you're putting a chapter out and you haven't done the next chapters, how are you going to... Are you going to go back and make changes?
So yeah, well, yes, for the published version I do. So I always write with the end in mind. Like, that's what I always say. So I know where I'm going. So I have my destination. It's just that the map, sometimes the roads go in different directions. So, and I write romance primarily. So I think it would be a lot harder to fly by the seat of my pants if I was writing mystery or suspense or even like fantasy. I think it would be more difficult because there's so much world building and then with mystery or suspense, you need those red herrings and those things that sort of layered into it. And then I think it gets more complicated with the sort of backtracking and fixing things. But again, like with the online platform, if I make a mistake, then I can just put a note at the bottom of the chapter and be like, by the way, in chapter 8, like, this has changed, so that somebody doesn't call me out, which they will do, and they do if I screw up. So, yeah.
You mentioned like world building, like you get that first chapter or two chapters, and your world building and your character building. There's a lot of building going on, and that's what I'm finding right now, because I've gone back and I realize that what I've been writing is chapter 2, and I really need to write chapter 1. So I'm going back and writing it chapter 1, and trying to insert just the right thing to show just the right part of character and weave it with it, because it's a futuristic world.
Yeah.
And not to try to do too much of one or the other.
Right. What's your inciting incident, though? Because normally what ends up happening, at least from my understanding from editors I've worked with, is that they end up coming in and taking out the first chapter or first two chapters or first five chapters because people haven't really figured out where their inciting incident is. Like, where is the story starting? Like, where's the starting point? Because readers tend to have a lot less patience nowadays for, like, that world-building piece that it used to be you could kind of meander a little bit at the start, but now they want to kind of like get in and get going, right? So
yeah, they say that you have to draw the audience in within the first three pages, otherwise they start to lose it. So yeah you're right, the attention span and everything is much shortened now than it used to be.
Well, there's so many things to compete with it. So, I mean, it makes sense. There's so much competition for people's attention.
But I also think if they cut too much out or chop it around, it can lose the flow. And I think writing is all about the ebb and the flow and the rhythm. And I've tried moving chapters around before, cutting and pasting and stuff, and when I've reread it, it doesn't flow as it had before, because obviously I hadn't written it as a continuum, because I had written it like that and then it was chopped and changed. And I think people have to be really careful about that.
Yeah, that's definitely hard, I think. Any time I've tried to rearrange chapters, I'm just better off to just rewrite them. It just doesn't work very well for me to just move stuff around. I can't do it.
It's as I say, it's about the rhythm. There's a definite cadence and rhythm and flow.
Well, I mean, speaking of which, rhythm and flow, like, do you guys find that that comes easily? I know that, for instance, my book, after I'd gone through the first draft and was going through the second, third time, realized that in the middle of the book, it kind of moved too fast. Like, the rhythm was too quick. So I had to go back and add actually 3 or 4 scenes to flesh out that metal part. Because, yeah, it was too quick. So I don't know if you guys find anything like that. If you find it goes too fast or too slow when you go back and...
And you wanted to move slower then.
Well, I didn't realize at the time writing the first draft, but then going back and reading it again, it was like, yeah, there's things that I could include that should be in there, and it would slow it down because it was just all of a sudden they're at a certain point. It's okay. What happened in between needed to be fleshed out, basically. But yeah, I haven't struggled too much with pacing. It just kind of comes as I write the first draft, basically. But I don't know about you guys.
Borrow print books, audiobooks, movies, video games, music, and much more from the Huron County Library.
Well, I always find that I finish a novel too soon, so I don't have enough words. It becomes a novella. This has been my struggle always, from trying to get a full length novel. So, because a lot of my work's been murder mysteries, I'll have finished and solved the murder and everything, and I've still got about another 20,000 words short of a full length novel. So that becomes a red herring. I write another 20,000 words and throw in a twist, the twist in the tail, so to speak. And I don't think my readers know that it's deliberately done like that, because I have to pad it out.
You know, when I think of pace, right? You think of pace. I think of what, because I'm writing for... what I'm currently writing is for a teen audience. And when I see what movies come out and the pace that it's just like the story is just rolling down a hill, like right from beginning to end. It's
like those frantic paced movies.
It's frantic right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that's what I worry about, is am I not going fast enough all the time?
If you're writing for a young audience, I think about my grandchildren. They want the action, action, action. I mean, they just want to get on with it. And, you know, things like the Twilight and all those vampire things, that's full of action. I couldn't write like that myself. But I think you have to be aware of the fact that these young people, their expectation is to have this frenetic, scenes going on.
Just runaway action.
Mm-hmm. Which I struggle with, because setting, I guess that's another thing about craft is setting, and especially when you talk about it needs to go fast, how much time can you spend on setting when you're writing a book? Like, because that slows things down, right? As soon as you go into setting for even a sentence, it's like, okay, now it's starting to slow down. And yeah, I kind of feel that, I guess, pressure to not spend much time on it because it's too slow, basically.
Well, you see, and things are different. I remember when I taught English, kids would get, why are they talking for 3 pages about what Hawaii looks like? Because every kid now knows what Hawaii looks like.
Yeah, that's good.
Whereas 120 years ago, or 100 when the book was written, nobody knew what, unless you'd been there, nobody knew what Hawaii looked like. So that sort of stuff kind of gets tossed by the wayside. Like, you don't have to describe when you say a man, an urban street or something like that. You probably don't have to get into all the little nitty gritty details, because the kids already have an image in their head of what they think that street looks like. You know, and so they kind of, the pacing, because that's one of the reasons why it's hard. The storylines are great in those old novels, but it's hard to get the kids to fall because they get lost in all that descriptive detail that they're not interested in. And it, to them, it doesn't mean anything. But at one time, people used to, their brains were wired differently. People used to have to pick up, wanted to know what those images, they wanted to know, like, the clock, what the clock looked like on the mantelpiece and what, you know, whereas they don't have patience for that. They're into the, but it depends on the genre, I guess. They're into the action adventure. So they're not really into setting or scenery, or unless it's relevant to the action. Like, you have a fantasy, like, yours is kind of like a historic fantasy thing, right?
Yeah, historical fiction and what's a fantasy fused into it, yeah.
So setting and back would probably be important to that, because you're probably not talking about a typical landscape or a typical setting.
It's, yeah, lots of, you know, ancient Greece, so that's, right, and lots, I mean, again, people know kind of what it looks like because of television or movies, so you don't have to go in maybe as much detail, but...
I watched 300. Okay, this has got out of the story. I know what it looks like.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah. You know? Right, exactly.
I saw a picture of it, so let's go.
Yeah. So, yeah, I spend some time, for sure, in the book on setting, but I was always conscious of not... Because I always, like Lord of the Rings and books like that, they had quite a bit of, you know, setting and slower pace.
Because you needed that to get a feel for...
For the world.
Yeah, for the world, that, yeah.
So, yeah, I kind of tried to walk that line of building the world out and having it so that you could picture it, and also not going too slow. I don't know about your, like, in your novels, Wendy, do you have to worry about setting much?
I try to worry about it as little as possible. Most of mine are contemporary, right? So it's taking place in, like, current time and place. So other than some brief details, so they're not walking into a white room with white furniture or no furniture. Mm-hmm. Fairly sparse on details, I would say. That's my own self-assessment. Someone else might tell you something differently. But that's how I feel when I write it. I'm like, okay, so there's some walls, there's some furniture, whatever else. But a lot of that stuff comes along, like sort of fleshing out the room comes along as the characters are doing the action, right? They move from one place to another, or they sit in a chair, or they go to a kitchen, or they, whatever the case may be. So then the reader's kind of building it in their head as you're writing it, which I always find really cool when you read a book and then you see a movie and you're like, that is exactly how I pictured it. And you're like, that is amazing that, like, what was in my head was also in someone else's head, obviously. And that those details translated from the page to someone else, like, exactly the same way.
Yeah. I mean, the first two things that come to mind are, in The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbits, where the hobbits live, that looked exactly like I thought it looked like in the books.
Yeah.
And Harry Potter, the castle, Hogwarts, in the books, I pictured exactly like it was in the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is cool when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me again, Wendy, what did you come like when the editor would like to chop the first 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 chapters to get to what point did you...
Inciting incident. Yeah, so it's like the thing that kicks off, like, the story. So if we went with Twilight as an example, then, like, the thing that kind of kicks off that story is that Edward saves Bella from, like, a speeding car that comes at her or whatever, right? And so we have, like, maybe a chapter or half a chapter or something before she's at the high school and she gets saved by this guy she didn't even know knew who she was. Or if we think about, what's another one that I can think of? If we think about The Hunger Games, if you've ever read The Hunger Games or seen the movie, it opens with Katniss, like, waking up. But in that first chapter, you know that the Hunger Games is coming. And you know that she's really conflicted about the fact that her sister is going to be part of that. And so that's your start of your inciting incident, right? You know what the conflict is or what conflict is coming. And that's kind of... You need that in your first couple of chapters to help drive your story. So
did you have to do that? You had to drop those chapters?
No, we were just talking about, because he was talking about how he was going back and thinking about adding a chapter, and I said that a lot of times the experience I've had with editors and the feedback that I've seen on various platforms and so forth is that a lot of times people don't do the inciting incident fast enough. So they feel like they need all this world building and all of this, all of these details, like they're very important for you to understand the story. But in reality, you can start with the inciting incident and backfill those details as you go through. So I don't know. But I mean, without reading the story, I can't say if that's true or not, but those are examples of, you need that sense to get that momentum that you're talking about. Like you need to know what the character is trying to overcome or what the conflict is or what they're after.
And yeah, I know, like looking back at my early 20s writing my books, I did that. I put too much, because I think it's all, right, when you're first starting out, especially I think when you're writing, you think, oh, I need all this information at the start, otherwise they won't know what's going on, but then it's super boring because there's nothing happening, really. It's
so well crafted, but super boring.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I spent a lot of time on that.
Yeah.
Cut it up.
It's all got to go. Yeah. Which I guess leads us to another part of craft, which is plot. And it sounds like we touched on it earlier. You said you don't really plan, Wendy, on your plot ahead of time. And I don't. I've written fantasy and historical fiction, and I guess I have always had an idea what's going to be at the end. But I don't always map it all out. Like, I don't know what each chapter is going to be between the start and the finish. I just kind of have an idea. Yeah, start, middle, end, vaguely. And then I start writing, and the plot kind of just develops as I go. But what do you guys do? Do you guys plan ahead of time? Do you just write as you go and the plot kind of comes?
I find the first 2-3 chapters great. And then I always find myself writing about the 7th or 8th chapter, and there's this gap. Because then I can see from there at the end. So that I have these pieces of the story, the first 3 or 4 chapters, and I have the 7th and 8th chapter, and then kind of I got an idea of where it's going, and then I try to draw a line connecting everything. Not always the straightest line, but that's where I'm aiming. Mm-hmm. Then I've also gone back and then actually, when I was writing screenplay-wise, I had all kinds of scenes, and I just made a map of all the scenes and did a true timeline, like a total, this beautiful graphical analysis of the whole thing, of the whole plot. Because then when I was getting near the end, I had to get everything to come to a close. And I found that worked best. It always makes me think of, the paper that used to go through the printer that was all folded together in one big long piece of paper. So that's what I got myself. I taped together about 8 or 10 sheets of paper, and I drew all the time, the lines of every scene out and where things, the overarching theme and then the B plot and where everything's beginning and ending. And I haven't done that in any other writing I've done before, but that just seemed to make sense at that time.
And it worked?
And it worked, yeah.
Yeah, very good.
It worked for me.
Yeah, when I've, because I write murder mysteries, well, I write other stuff as well, but it's the same thing with a murder mystery. You do have to know right at the beginning who did it. And then you work almost backwards from that. But you have to throw a lot of red herrings in, otherwise the murder's solved in the first chapter. So I map. I'm a great mapper. I like to do like a web with arrows all going from the center out. And I do actually structure it quite well. And I use that as a tool to, I refer to it when I'm writing to just keep myself on track, because I've spent a lot of time planning and thinking about the whole murder mystery. So once I get writing, I have to flick back. I always do it at the back of my book, because I do this by hand, and I refer to it constantly just to see where I should be. And not to say I don't change it a bit, but essentially that keeps me on track. And when I'm writing plays, particularly historic plays, I have to do, first of all, a whole timeline from the date when whatever happened first, and then keep myself on track with that. So just like you, I have a long linear list of all dates, and I write my play around that, because otherwise I get lost. I mean, I have to keep myself on track. So, yeah. I'm not a structured person, particularly when I write. I'm very free flowing, but I always do quite a big structural plan before I start to write.
I found the impetus of the whole thing was I had a number of scenes and gaps, and then as I was filling gaps in, I was asking myself, is it daytime or nighttime right now? This is why I then had to draw this out, because I was losing track of what time of day it was for the linearity of the story, or which, you know. So it became a necessity in that case. Mm-hmm. Next time I should just write it from beginning to end, and then I guess it doesn't work. Can anybody write like that, just from the beginning to the end?
That's how I write too.
Yeah, I couldn't. I have a friend who like jumps around from she'll write chapter 23 and then chapter 4 and then chapter, and I would like more. I'm horrified.
Right, I couldn't do that. No, I couldn't do that. Either.
So yeah, not for
so me. How does she connect them? How does she, if she writes say chapter 23 and then she hops along to chapter 7?
Yeah.
How they must stand alone on the.
Well, she writes in Scrivener, so I don't know if that makes a difference. I know in that one you can kind of separate your chapters out and you can make a timeline and it's really fancy. So I don't know if that helps her or not, but I think it's just, that's just the way her brain works. Like mine is horrified by that, but for other people, that jumping around is how they get the critical moments of the story out first, and then they kind of fill around it to put in the other stuff that you need to make those moments happen, right? So.
Well, it sounds like Barry, that's kind of what you do.
Yeah, exactly. This chapter 7 and 8 always pops out.
Right.
Early on, it's like I find myself writing that part.
Because that's like you're saying, a critical point. So you see that earlier than other parts. Mm-hmm. Whereas, I can't, I'm like you, Wendy, I can't, I have to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like I have to go in sequential order because my brain just doesn't work like that. I guess I can't jump around. I would just get super lost. And even writing it one after the other, actually my book, as I wrote the first draft, I actually wrote just a little summary on a cue card and I stuck them up on my wall actually. So I had all these chapters just because I knew when I go back, I would probably have trouble, figuring out what happened in chapter 33 or whatever. So I didn't map it ahead of time, but as I went through, I mapped it just to refer back to. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Huron County Author Talk with your host, Hamilton Baker. If you'd like to learn more about the authors or to purchase one of their books, you can visit their websites. For more information about the podcast, you can visit the library's website at HuronCountyLibrary.ca. Stay tuned for our next episode that we'll release in 2 weeks. The music on this program is Echo by Alan McKellis. Thanks for listening.